Welcome back to Season 5 of the Read Connected podcast. We're so grateful to be joined in the studio today by hockey great Alina Mueller. Alina's incredibly vast and accomplished hockey resume will be described in a nuanced way as we get to speak with her in a moment. We hope, most importantly, that you get to know more than the athlete, but the person, Alina Mueller. Words to describe Alina include humble, leader, clutch. She's a force on and off the ice. On the Read Connected podcast, we strive to bring on guests who we believe have qualities that can inspire our audience in a positive way. And we're looking forward to this conversation to accomplish just that. But for now, here's a brief overview of her bio. Alina Mueller originally hails from Winterthur, Switzerland, and has represented and played for the Swiss Olympic team 3 times. In 2014, at the age of 15, Alina came in clutch as she scored the game-winning goal to secure the win for her team and the bronze medal. She was the youngest hockey player ever to win a medal. In 2018, her team placed 5th overall in the world, with Alina scoring the most goals in one game as a women's Olympic hockey player, 4 goals in one game. Most recently, Alina and the Swiss national team in 2022 placed 4th in the world. In addition to her roles on the Swiss national team, Alina played hockey right here in the city of Boston, Massachusetts, for Northeastern University. This program's run by Dave Flint and showcased Alina's skills as a standout player and leader on the team. As a consistent powerhouse, Alina significantly contributed to the Northeastern team, winning 5 straight conference tournament championships, Hockey East, and a 3rd straight Frozen Four appearance. Not only are her skills on the ice incredibly impressive, but also those in the classroom. During her time at Northeastern, she earned a degree in behavioral neuroscience and rehabilitation sciences. After her 5th year of college playing hockey, Alina found herself at a crossroads. But the story doesn't end at Northeastern. A recent addition to the women's professional sports in general has come on the scene with the support of Billie Jean King. The Professional Women's Hockey League is now a force on the ice. Alina was selected as the 3rd overall pick in the inaugural draft by the Boston team, the Boston Fleet. The Boston Fleet represents strength in numbers and is led by coach Courtney Bichard-Kessel, as well as their inaugural captain and hockey legend, Hillary Knight. Alina, we're so happy to have you here.
Whoa, thanks for the intro. I'm so happy to be here.
It's great to have you, Alina. It's hard to know where to start with you. You know, we had lunch with you and just heard so many amazing things about you and your life and your experiences. So for the audience, I think it's good to kind of start from the beginning. You know, talk us through the hockey journey. Where did it begin? Because, you know, people can see you on the ice, on TV, and be like, wow, like, she's amazing. But we want to know you as a person and your journey, you know, in the hockey world and also just as a person. So, you know, where did all this start, Alina?
Sure. Alexis mentioned it. I'm from Winterthur, Switzerland. I have an older brother. I grew up with my parents at home. And my parents were pretty athletic. Their whole life, my mom played handball. It's a very popular sport in Europe. And my dad played soccer. And yeah, we didn't have anything to do with hockey. But then we just lived close by a rink at home, and we just loved to go skate, open skate when we were young. My dad would usually bring my brother and I out on the ice, and we'd just play some pond hockey style. And then, like, one day, I don't know, a bit about 6 years old, I saw the little ones had practice after the open skate, and I loved their gear, and I was like, I wanna be part of this. I wanna play hockey. And then we asked the coach, or my dad asked the coach, if I can join them. And he said, yeah, for sure. Have her come the next day. So it's actually funny that I started before my older brother started. So he kind of ended up in the sport because of me. We both played handball, soccer. I rode BMX. I did track and field, literally just like moving all day. We loved sports, just being outside, having fun. But hockey was the most fun. So yeah, in the end, we both stuck with hockey. And I played boys growing up. And then luckily, my journey ended up, coming here to Boston.
Wow. So when you say you asked to be part of the team, you were talking about actually a boys team. Is that correct?
Yes. Still up to now, we don't have any junior girls team in Switzerland. So everybody starts playing on a mixed team or mostly with guys. Yeah, with boys.
This is so interesting because we interviewed Rachel Pittman, who is a Dartmouth women's soccer coach. She hails from England. And she said something very similar, how she grew up when there wasn't really much for girls soccer. And she had to play against the boys. And I'm thinking to myself in the back of my head, I'm like, wow, Alina's going to have the same type of story. This is so interesting. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, it was so normal for me. I didn't know anything else. And I played them in my hometown with these guys like my age for about 6-7 years. So I kind of grew up with them. They were my friends. They accepted me like I'm one of them. So they didn't know anything different too. Most of my years, I was the only girl in the team. So yeah, I loved it. I liked it. I mean, they play hard. They just, yeah, want to have fun. And they were very including. But I have also heard of friends of mine, like girls that played with boys where they weren't accepted the same I was, and it was a tough road for them, and they were just happy like once they were able to play with the girls or women at a certain age. So for me it was a good journey. I learned a lot. I mean, I wouldn't be the player I am today if I didn't play. I played boys until I turned 18. Between like 16, 17, 18 years old, it was definitely a different story. Some of the guys, came into puberty and tried maybe, to be cooler than they actually were. Or they just, weren't as nice sometimes. But I was really lucky with the coaches I had. Being a girl on a boys team comes also with a lot of extra organization and just a lot of extra effort for the coaches, for the whole team. Usually have to organize a second changing room or like when do we shower and just stuff like that. Or when it's like an overnight stay somewhere, it's just like some extra effort. So I'm really thankful for the coaches that we're happy that I was able to play for them.
What was it about hockey that stood out to you? You seem like you're kind of an adventurous person to just go out and to play and, play different games, be out in nature, have fun. What stood out about hockey compared to the other sports for you?
I think number one was that at the very young age, there's already a lot of action going on. You have a lot of practice, you have a lot of games, you go to tournaments. And in other sports, it's usually like once a week or twice a week, and then every 2 weeks you have a competition or a tournament. So we want to do this every day. We want to practice and see the guys every day and be on the ice. So I think that's why we leaned towards hockey from the beginning. And then after a while, we were not able to do all the sports together anymore because the time, it was too time consuming to play hockey. So we had to decide which sport do we want to go with. My brother actually decided when he was like 12 years old, like super late. Nowadays, I don't think that would be possible anymore. But I decided at about 9 years old, they want to play hockey. You need to be good at everything. You need to be fast. You need to, use your mind, your head. You know, need to know the game. It's a team sport. Mm. You see your peers every day. You can just already play and experience so much at the very young age. And it's the best sport in the world.
It's so interesting. I was talking to a student I work with who plays hockey recently because I was trying to make the connection between focus, attention, and executive function skills. And from a neuroscience perspective, helping them to think about how they have to track where the puck is, where the different players are, anticipating what might come next, finding balance on the skates, on the ice, like so many factors. And I know we can kind of break that down for most sports, but I think for hockey, because you're literally playing on an unstable surface, right? Because you're on ice and you're on these thin skates that are keeping you up, that it does require an additional level of focus. And I think that's brilliant for a lot of young people too, because it does make a lot of the mind-body connections as you're playing.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And because of that, you train a lot, you are involved with the sport a lot, you can always improve and get better at certain areas. It doesn't have to be always skill-wise, exactly like focus-wise, just mental performance. Got to work on it too. And it just keeps you, I'd say, safe or away from, going down a different route, just like losing track of maybe what's healthy in life. And I think, nowadays, super hard for certain young people to hop on the right train and not get caught in unhealthy like cycles or habits.
It's so interesting that you said, you decided at 9 and when your brother decided at 12, it felt like that was late in the game. But I think what you're saying is so important because I think that's the beauty of youth sports, especially. Right, all sports, because there's camaraderie involved. It almost becomes, if you're lucky, as you described, like a family atmosphere where everybody kind of has each other's backs and they're working for everybody to improve and be better. But you're right, it does require and develop a certain level of discipline too. And one of the things we love about bringing successful people on this podcast is to kind of like peel back like some of the layers of what it took to get to where you are as a professional hockey player today and having such an amazing bio of all the things you've accomplished at such a young age already. And I think a lot of young people kind of miss what goes into it, what that process is. And we're very process oriented in the work we do and even in our personal lives, to kind of peel things back. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, what it took to get to this place, because we were talking earlier about how much pressure young people sometimes have to just like get really good and devote all their time and effort into things. But you had a little different path than extrinsic motivation. A lot of it really seems like it came from you within, which is amazing.
Yeah. I always say, I think the luckiest part in my life is that my parents had nothing to do with hockey or nobody really in my family or my closest friends or at that time when I was younger had anything to do with hockey. We didn't know that sport other than watching it on TV. Since day one, I just loved to play. It was just my own decision, and nobody ever pushed me to do this for somebody else, or I just always wanted to do it. And it's actually a funny story. I overheard my mom telling somebody else that story about like 4 years ago. I didn't know about this either when I was younger. Obviously, I didn't remember, but it's obviously a lot of work and effort for the parents. Hockey is not an easy sport. You have to drive your kids to all these tournaments, practice. Can't really go alone because the gear is super heavy and you don't even know how to put the gear on yourself when you're young. So they just honestly need to be with you all the time. Luckily, we grew up next to a rink. So we were actually walking with the trolley bag across the street to the rink. The first like almost 10 years of my career. And then, once I got a little older, I was able to go alone. So at least my parents only had to drive me to games or events further away than our home rink. Because, they were like, I don't know if we would have let you guys play hockey if we had to drive somewhere every day to practice. So, yeah, super lucky and thankful for them, of course. And then back to the story, I overheard my mom telling to her friend that she said if one day she would have had to get me out of bed or push me to go to practice, it would have stopped this right away. Like she would have said, you go find another sport. Mm. So, I mean, just hearing that, I realized it was a lot of work for them. But also realizing that I just always enjoyed going to practice or going to see my team and play with them. I think there was, up to now, I can't remember a single day that I didn't want to go to practice. Mm. I mean, there are certain workouts or days, you would rather play game instead of going to the gym. But a big part is the discipline part. You just know what you do it for, why you do it. It's just part of it. And people ask about, are you not tired of playing hockey, of sacrificing so many other things in life? And I know I can say no, not at all. Hockey has given me so much more than I would have ever imagined. And I love the journey. I love the ups and downs. On the road. I love just everything you experience with it and how many people I met along the way just through hockey. And I would not change it for anything.
That's pretty special. And it's special in the context of how that story could be the opposite for a lot of athletes out there that we talked about earlier, that sometimes you can feel that pressure from anybody. It doesn't have to be from parents. It could be from literally anybody in the athlete's life. And it could be so much pressure that it becomes burnout. And burnout is a real thing that is not visible. You know, we talked about this too. It's not something you can necessarily see people's emotions, but it can come out. And I think you're such a great role model for people out there to see that there is a different way to love something intrinsically. And it doesn't mean that you always 100% are just like having joy within it, right? It's hard work, it's discipline, but that there could be a different way rather than just burnout. Alexis and I have been watching the show The Bear, and it's about the restaurant business. You like the show?
Well, I'm not a show person at all. Yeah. I think I've watched two shows in my entire life. One was The All-American and the other one is The Bear.
Oh my God, what a coincidence. Awesome. Yeah. So, but it's very similar I'm spoiling kind of the end of the third season, but like a lot of the theme around that is around, do you need to, does excellence have to come at the expense of your well-being completely? Does it have to ruin you to get excellent? You know, do you have to break yourself down? Do leaders need to break you down to become excellent? And I'm so grateful that you can share your story, and maybe you can share even more details about it to really exemplify it, because it's possible. And I think we all need hope. We all need to see a vision for something that's possible. Otherwise, A, we don't know any better, or B, we just fall into the same patterns that we see other people do. So just from our field and, you know, from the bottom of our hearts, we're just really grateful that you can share this for people to hear.
Oh, I love to be here. So, don't get me wrong. It doesn't mean that I love to train or get up at 6 in the morning and it's cold outside and walking to the ring just freezing and then go on the ice, and obviously along the way you need the environment that helps you, the support around you. Mm. I was so lucky. I had the right people around me through my whole journey, and just learned from a very early age to put myself first. I like to please everybody, to be good friends with everybody. But the older I became, the more I had to be a leader, I realized you can't please everybody. You can't be best friends with everybody, and you have to learn to have crucial conversations. Doesn't mean you don't like that person. It's just for the better, for the growth of both of the humans and or the cause you're working towards. So just, yeah, learning along the way. And I love to just talk to people, connect with them, learn from them. And then pick whatever works best for me. Doesn't mean that I have to agree with everybody, but just hearing other people's opinions, other people's stories, it also helps, yeah, realizing what a great life you have yourself, realizing that everybody has some struggles to deal with, even though from the outside it looks like they're perfect. It's just great to live right now. I'm happy if I can inspire anybody out there.
What you said is really insightful, because you kind of brought it back to even the challenges are something you embrace. And your website says you're a student of life. And I can see that in you, because, you know, when you're saying, you know, I had to grow myself and to realize I can't please everyone and still can be a leader in a positive way, even though, you know, you can't be best friends with everyone, which is like great wisdom for people to understand. You can get along with people even though, you know, you're not best friends, or even you have differences or you have conflict. And for you to say that you can still embrace that as part of the journey and not let that become like so much pain or struggle that it ruins the experience. It's not an all or nothing thing. We always talk about this. The way you perceive things is really important, because challenges could become all or nothing disasters to people, where you're saying both things could be true. You know, if there's a challenge, you can embrace the challenge and learn and grow from it, you and the other person, if you find ways to do it. And by the way, dealing with conflict is not easy. So I'm sure there was growing pains with that, like there is for everybody. But that is part of the journey, as you're saying. And I love that as an example, because it's just, number one, it's real life. But number two, it's also hopeful and inspiring.
For sure. Totally agree. And part of it, part of everybody's life, for sure.
I just had a conversation with a high schooler yesterday about a similar theme, because I think as a woman, as a girl growing up too, sometimes we feel a lot of responsibility to, like you say, like please everybody, making sure we're doing all the things. We often, as females, get into the habit of apologizing for things that we do, even when we're taking care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I literally just had this conversation with a high schooler and I said, you are allowed to care for yourself. Right? If you're going to change a plan or do something differently because you're just avoiding it, that's a different story. But if you're making a conscious effort and choice to care for yourself because you know it's going to grow your soul, yourself, in whatever you're doing, there's nothing more admirable than that. And when you talk about leadership, a lot of people think there's like a playbook for how to be a leader. But I think being a leader, and as you know, we've gotten to know you and we continue to get to know you, I think your leadership comes from you being in tune with yourself as a person, as a player, as a teammate, as a friend, right? I think all of it is a part of the process. So I'm queuing you up not only to talk about you and your life, but also I have in the back of my mind a lot of young athletes who are striving to be better and figure it out. And I think the answer is to like tune in and really get to know yourself a little bit better. But I wonder what you would say to some of those young athletes kind of going through it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you get to know yourself better and better, you know where you're good at, you know where you're best at, you know where you're weak at, where you can improve. I think it's just very humbling if you realize. I always see that way. Like every person you meet, you can learn something from. Anywhere. Is it like athletic wise? Is it personality wise? Is it how they deal with something? How they talk to people? And that's why I love meeting people and just figuring out like what makes them special, and then again trying to see if that's something I want to learn from them, or if that's something I want to become better at. So it's just, I think nothing goes over connecting with people.
What would you say to a young person, especially a young female athlete? Because, you know, in athletics, as far as athletics goes, whether you're in Europe or here in the United States or anywhere around the world, I think we as women are trying to learn how to show up and be powerful, not only as athletes, but also as forces, just as times are changing?
I think a big part is having role models. And yeah, nowadays, women's sports get more attention, and we get to see, we learn who these people on TV are, like the great athletes. We get to know them as people. And again, we get to know that they're not perfect. Just like realizing that they're normal people too, and you can become that person with just a lot of hard work, a lot of passion, a lot of grit, and going your path no matter what it takes. Just do what it takes. And I think it's hard to do it without role models. So I'm super, super happy and excited to see, even with our new league now. Even for myself, having captain Hillary Knight, she's the face of women's hockey all over the world, and especially in America. Getting to know her, I mean, I've played against her since a few years, and I know how great of a hockey player she is, and how well she knows the game. But it just it's on another level if you get to know the person, if you see day to day how she leads, how she treats her body, how she treats other people, just the values she lives by, is unbelievable. And it just makes everybody around her better people. You want to be around her. You want to be associated with her. You want to learn from her. And having somebody like her, you realize you want to be that person for somebody else. And you can be that person for somebody else. Anybody, literally anybody can be an inspiration for somebody else. And realizing that you can be that person also makes you just a better person.
It's so funny because we had Mia on the show a few seasons ago.
Mia Brown. Assistant captain alongside Alina.
Yeah, and it's so funny because she spoke about you the same way you're just talking about your current captain. And it's so funny because you're hearing us, so you can't see Alina's body language. But when we call her a leader, there's such a humbleness about you, right? It's not that you're squirming away from that title, but I think you're owning it. But also you're like, I just do what I need to do, is what your body language tells me. Like, yeah, I show up and I'm there for people.
It's genuine.
It's so genuine and it's so beautiful. And I just wanted to kind of narrate that a little bit for the listeners, because I think that, you know, there's a little bit of an acceptance of like, I know what it takes to show up, and I'm so honored to be an inspiration or a support system for other people too. And you know, you embody that. I just wanted to narrate for the audience that this is kind of the nonverbal cues also that you're putting out into the world, not just your words.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Alina, you really are one of a kind person, and everyone's different. I think we can all learn from the way you think about things. You're very integrated in how you think. It's not like you're just thinking one way and that's the only way. You take a lot of different variables and you kind of try to address them all in different ways, or look at different perspectives and try to see how they fit together, rather than just saying, oh, it's just this way and that's it. You know, and I think in athletics, it's so easy to fall into like a one-track mind of, I'm just going to be the best. I have to improve all the time. And that's the only thing that matters. I have to impress everybody. I have to impress my coach. I got to get playing time. That's all that matters. And can't blame athletes for thinking that way, because people want playing time and they want to play and win and all that stuff. But to show that you can be successful and think and feel and act and relate with people in this type of flexible way, where it's not just that, that's not the only thing that matters, is unbelievable. I mean, for any sport, women's sport, men's sport.
Even outside of sports.
It's important.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with how I grew up. Just the values my parents instilled in my brother and I. They're always really kind. They're always really open for and accepted everybody around us, respected. Respect is, yeah, written really huge at home. Just like, again, not not thinking just with your own mind, and you think what you do is the right way, but learning from everybody, and also realizing that sometimes you're wrong, and then that's totally fine, and could be the right way a year ago, but maybe now it's not anymore, and being adaptable, being just able to grow and leave your comfort zone. I mean, yeah, leaving home at 20 years old, leaving my home country to come to the US, that wasn't easy. I knew why I did it. I knew what I did it for. I knew I want to become a better hockey player. And that the only way I could do that was coming to the US. But just how much I grew as a person here is unbelievable. It was the best decision of my life to leave home at 20 years old. Yeah, just bringing my backpack, whatever I learned at home, and coming here. And I was just, I can't thank Northeastern and my teammates enough, because they accepted the way I am, the way I wanted to be since day one. I think the biggest fear I had was, it had nothing to do with the country or hockey wise. The biggest fear I had was, can I be who I was at home? Can I be the person who I want to be in this new setting, in this new university life? Because in Switzerland, you only know about college or college sports through movies. And you know that sometimes, yeah, they can go a little crazy, and it's a lot of partying, a lot of, I don't know, just drinking alcohol and stuff like that. And I just knew I'm not that type of person. I like taking care of my body. I like living healthy, because I knew in the end, I need to have the best mind and body possible to succeed in sports and in life. And that was my biggest fear, that I can't be that person that I was at home, with everybody around me that knows me, that know me, and just leaving, yeah, the comfort zone, and dumping myself into a very, very new environment. And it has been, yeah, the best journey and the best decision of my life.
You seem like you're confident as a person to being yourself, which probably plays a lot in terms of what you just said. Like, you've had other people embrace and accept you, and also you've learned to do that for yourself. I think there's nothing more important in life than learning genuinely, you know, how you are as a person, who you are. Strip away all the ego, strip away all all the other external stuff, and to truly be genuine to your values, to who you are, and to feel confident in that, and to just accept yourself with your weaknesses and strengths, all of it, is one of the most beautiful things. It sounds like you're a great example of that too.
Thank you. Yeah, it takes a lot of courage sometimes, for sure. Especially if you're around people you don't know too well, and you don't know what they think is good and their values or what they live by. And yeah, sometimes you have to make a compromise or bend a little bit. But yeah, for me, that's definitely number one thing, just to always stay true to myself. And in the end, I know that I can only perform the best way or be the best version of myself if I feel happy in my own skin, or if I feel confident in what I do. And so that's what I hope I can prioritize always.
I love that.
You gave such a good overview, but I kind of want to rewind for a minute and highlight a couple of things, because not only did you come to a new country to go to school and play hockey, but you chose a really rigorous career path in your studies. Mm. And you didn't just come over here during normal times, because you, as we mentioned before, came over and then COVID hit and the world kind of froze, literally, and changed a little bit. I wonder if you can kind of, you know, maybe zoom in a little bit more on that experience and some of the things that the people around you did to embrace you, and the things you had to do for yourself to adjust and adapt in those times.
For sure. Yeah. Definitely wasn't easy. Being away from home during such a weird time. On the planet. Hmm.
I say the time that shall not be named, even though I named it.
Yeah, I think definitely I was again pretty lucky with the people I was surrounded with at that time, and also lucky with the age I was in, the life stage I was in. Can't even, believe like having to, nurture a child during that time, having no contact with anybody else, bringing up, a 3, 4, 5 years old child that is not being able to interact with anybody else than the mom and the dad, or just like the closest ones, or having to start college, like coming here to the US and COVID hits and the first year is all online. A lot of kids didn't have to have these hard conversations that makes them better people. They can just text or just write an email and think they're fine. They didn't have to be disciplined to complete their homework or just stuff like that. I think the world became a little more complacent in that way. But then there's also the positive side. I think the world came closer together, realized that maybe slowing down a little bit and is better for you, and prioritizing is better than getting everything done at once, and prioritizing the important things, what really matters in life, the connection with the people. I have family in Italy that I probably haven't seen in like 10, 15 years. And I had my grandma die. I could not be with her. It was during COVID. I couldn't travel. It just, you can't get these moments back. And I think it was very good for us to realize that we can't get these moments back. And I have to say I live a different life since then. I'd rather take a day for myself, take care of myself than in getting something done that is not important, or making it to an event, or just some materialistic stuff that is not gonna give you anything in life. I think it was helpful, but definitely a struggle, and athletically obviously also a big struggle. Being pretty much alone. If I were not in a team sport, I wouldn't know how I would have done after these like 2-3 years isolated, really. And thanks God we had our teammates to lean on. And we had at Northeastern a great support staff. The university did a lot for us that we could keep our studies going and keep our life going the best way possible. A lot of friends of mine at home, like they had to change their pathway, had to find a new job, or just like it's definitely something we will tell our grandchildren about later on.
For sure. Oh, for sure. What did you do to stay fit athletically? Were you guys able to all still practice and get on the ice? And like, what did you have to do? To get to where you are already, there's so much self-discipline involved, but to have different barriers in your way, how'd you do that?
Can I ask a quick related question to that, to connect with Alexis is saying? Because you had contacted us about, you want to talk a little bit about that kind of neuro training and the mind training that you've gone through, and maybe we can relate that to this experience too in terms of the mental training.
Yeah. Again, I was really lucky at what life stage I was at when that time period came along, and we were not able to practice as a team really for a couple of months, and we had to sometimes go in isolation and actually be alone, live alone, train in our little apartment or room, just trying to somehow move your body. I mean, if you're an athlete, you're used to moving around every day. You go crazy if you have to stay, just lay down or stand still for a couple of days. Mm. But again, I was even at that time mature enough to realize that it's okay if I can't be at my very best physically right now. It is important to stay clear mentally. Mm. I was studying neuroscience, so I am learning about the mind, about how we process things, about how we learn, and emotions, how emotions affect us a lot. It's a very complex organ we have up there, and it's absolutely beautiful to learn about it. So I was definitely staying busy with just focusing on my studies, but then also use that for training and myself you don't need any room or space to train your mind, really. Mm-hmm. You can do it laying in your bed. Luckily I've started with neuroathletic training about 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Pretty much around when I started college, because I was just very interested in it, and I was getting to a certain stage in hockey where everybody's skilled, everybody's fast, but I wanted to know how else can I become this 1% better than everybody else? How can I keep improving without physically exertion myself? Because we already train a lot with the team. You can't do any additional trainings, really, because your body needs rest and needs to recover. And then learning that with neuroathletic training, I was training my eyes a lot. It's actually a pretty crazy story. I'm wearing contacts, and I was -1.5 and -2.0 or something, and after a year of neuroathletic training and eye training, I was able to bring it down to 0.5 and 0.75.
That's incredible.
It's absolutely crazy. Very small and short exercises that you can do whenever you have time and whenever you're waiting to literally wait for the train, the bus, or wherever. You can do these exercises and you can improve so much, and being able to concentrate better, being able to focus better, being able to free your mind to just play hockey, even though you have an exam coming up, you have a relationship that is not going well, something you worry about. It all affects your performance, and it's. I wish everybody gets access to it. I wish everybody tries to explore it and at least try it out and see how it makes you feel.
You know, what you're saying is really interesting too, because, you know, when I work with athletes, it's like when I'm in my sport, that's when I got to do my mental training. And the reality is you're on the ice or wherever you are in your sport, and also when you leave, and your emotions are your emotions, your thoughts are your thoughts, your focus is your focus. And so, you know, the work Alexis does as well, it's all encompassing, you know, everything is everything, you know, you can always work on these things and learn about yourself and learn how to understand yourself, not just in the context of the sport, but outside of the sport. And then that also translates within the sport as well.
Absolutely. I'm sure every athlete has experienced practices or games where they're like, I was not here. I was not in the game. And that's honestly the worst thing. You don't want this to happen, because you prepare so well, you're ready physically, you train so much to have everything you need. But if your mind is not participating or going or thinking the way you want it to, you can be as good as you can be. It's never gonna, you're never gonna be the best out there.
I think that relates to like every aspect of performance, like anywhere too. So everything you're saying, I think, is so applicable in so many aspects of life. And, you know, when you were talking about kind of being isolated in your dorm room or your apartment during COVID, that, you know, my dog, Rafa, he's a Vizsla and he has a lot of energy. And my trainer always says, you know, you can work him out on the field where he's running and he's doing work, but you can also do mental training with him too, yeah, where he needs to pause and inhibit or focus. Mm. And it's so interesting that we can see that for animals, but we don't always see that and appreciate that for ourselves as humans, yeah, right? Because the mental work is really just as important as the physical work, especially in athletics.
Yeah, for sure. And you need the support around you. You need people like the two of you, where yeah, young kids and athletes can talk to and free their mind. I didn't do it alone. I could never do it alone. And it's important to ask for help and just realizing that yeah, the best players out there, the best athletes, the most successful workers in the world, nobody has done it alone. Everybody yeah, needs to support, needs to help. And it's also cooler to do it together than alone.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. The relationship is meaningful, right? Yeah.
Very meaningful.
I have one more question about, and please feel free to add more about the neuroscience work that you mm-hmm. studied and do. I have a couple things that I remember from my graduate studies that I'm like, oh, this is such an aha moment for me. Do you have a couple of those from your training that, especially as being such an elite athlete, I'm sure there was a lot that resonated as you were learning about neuroscience, especially at this period of time where you were able to focus on your studies maybe more than the athleticism when you couldn't actually do more. I wonder if there were any aha moments or things that really resonated for you in that work.
Yeah. Well, athletically, like with the neuroathletic training, I basically started it because my body was started to break down a little bit. I had issues. I had pain. And I tried PT and obviously, like, I don't know, had the best trainers out there to kind of maintain it, but nothing really helped it to make it better. So I seeked, yeah, new options and new solutions. And that's when I, yeah, found, I mean, during my studies, I learned how the mind, yeah, controls all our, like the motor control and cognitive part as well, of course, but just like knowing that everything is connected and everything starts through like the nerves or somehow starts from the mind, just like opened my eyes to also pain and injuries, to maybe not always try to fix it surgically or in that way. Just sometimes there's something stuck, yeah, in your mind. And then I started neuroathletic training, and that was back home in Switzerland, going in for a couple of sessions, and just a difference in how I felt and how much like more range of motion and less pain I would feel. It was mind blowing. Just like all the hours I spent in the gym compared to one or two sessions in neuroathletic training, it was mind blowing. And then I knew from that. I mean, I already believed in it before, but when it's actually helping yourself and you can actually feel a difference, you're like, whoa, this is real. And now my interest grew to actually be able to learn, why it does that. So yeah, studying neuroscience, was just the start of it. And, I hope I will continue and pick it back up, once I'm done playing hockey.
We're going to go back in time for a second. And I hope this is not a leading question, but you played on the Olympic team. How old are you again?
15, my first time.
Yeah.
15,
okay.
Oh my gosh.
So sometimes, you know, the idea when you're a researcher and a practitioner, you want to research to teach you how to put into practice, and you want what you experience in the real world to inform the research. So I'm trying to make a metaphor here, but when you were 15, What did you learn about how the brain works in terms of performance back then that actually like kind of fits into the research nowadays that you learn about the brain? And because there's probably things you were doing back then that you probably want to recreate now that really helped you to play so well.
Yeah, that's a tough question because I don't really remember how I actually felt like back then.
Yeah.
But one thing I just wish I realized earlier is how important mental health, sleep, and nutrition is. Mm. I mean, when you are young, you feel great. Your body feels great. Your mind feels great. You don't have anything to worry about. Everything is taken care of. And you take it for granted somehow. And you just focus on physically training, playing, I don't know. And I just wish, I mean, I think I realized it pretty early on that recovery and nutrition and sleep and all that is really important.
Mm.
But there is no too early. I mean, I wish, yeah, people do, yeah, start to do it in high school already. Just realizing how much more you can give if you feel, again, in tune with yourself. You can maybe have a little less skill, but you will be able to be like an even better hockey player or better human if you feel great overall.
Yeah, but it makes you feel more confident too when you feel better mentally, physically. It's just like, oh, I'm ready. I feel more ready.
More confident and more safe to not fall in a hole if something is not going right.
Yeah.
Just like being able to be more balanced, more leveled. If something is not going your way, that this is not the end of the world. That there is a tomorrow, that you know how it's usually going, or you know how to do it and you know how to get out of there.
Can you do your best to describe what it's like when you're playing the way that you really hope to play, ideally? Like, what is the mindset like that you try to recreate in games that maybe the audience can learn from, people who are trying to kind of learn about them, the mindset to play? Because hockey is interesting because there's no set plays necessarily. It's free-flowing, so your mind's always on, I assume, you know? So what, what is the type of mindset you're trying to get into? What does it feel like? What's going on up there?
I think flow is a really important word that is used a lot. This stage, when it's just flowing, it's just going right. Any negative moment does not pull you down too much. Any positive moment does not, makes you go too high. Like if you are in that stage, it's obviously ideal, but getting there is not easy, and definitely also not easy to describe. Otherwise, I would do it every day. I think in hockey, it helps that you have shifts. Mm. Like you can always reset on the bench. You can reset in between periods. It's not like, I would say, like tennis or, I don't know, golfing, something that is just goes on for hours, like maybe 4 hours, and every point matters. Like every shot matters. It's way tougher. I think in hockey, what is tough is to let go what happened in the shift before. Something did not go well on the ice, or you missed a big chance. It's hard to let that go and not affect the next shift or the next couple of minutes. So that's something I still struggle with, and sometimes I'm better at it. Sometimes I'm not. But I just realized myself, it has a lot to do with how I feel already before the game or how I feel in general during the day. Again, if I'm able to let everything outside the locker room, if I let all the other stresses or like a nagging injury, if I let that just be and not them affect the way I play, that's how I get to that flow state the best. And a really important part is I need to be connected. I need to feel connected with my teammates.
Mm.
So whenever I feel like, ooh, I'm not feeling the right way, I'm not feeling free, I feel like I think too much. Hockey, you can't really think what's next. You just have to react and trust your instincts. And if I feel like I'm stuck a little bit and kind of wish I have somebody, let's say, talk to me or help me, what helps me is I go and talk to somebody else or help somebody else. And if I find myself maybe almost distracting a little bit or helping somebody else feel better, it makes me feel so much better. It gives me back so much, and I feel connected with that person. I feel like I know how she's doing right now. I know how she's feeling. I know where she is on the ice way better with my line mates. I need to be on the same page and talk a lot with my teammates, line mates. They just know that they're doing good, so I'm doing good.
That's really interesting. So it's almost, at least you use the word distraction. It's like you got the negative thoughts going. And you're like, I just need to put my energy somewhere else. Yep. And then you're back into the game because you're actually talking to them about the game anyway.
Yep.
So you're back in the game. And, you know, there is a ton of literature about in sports psychology, like when you're playing on the defensive and you're not being proactive, it's just that completely your mind is completely doing things in a different way. It's like you can't tell yourself, don't miss. You know, don't do this, don't do that. Your brain doesn't know what that means, right? Mm-hmm. If I tell you like, yep, don't look that way, there's no don't. It's like, you're looking at me now because you're looking at me.
Yeah. It's like the elephant in the room, yeah, right? I always say to my clients I work with, we have to sometimes distract from the distraction, right? Your distraction is like, oh, I did that wrong.
Just redirect it.
And you're redirecting or you're distracting yourself from the narrative in your mind that's getting you out of the game. It's awesome. That's such a great way of putting it, and well said.
Very interesting. Very interesting, Alina. Any other bits of wisdom just in terms of the mental side or just the experience of being a hockey player? Let me put this in a larger context because not everybody's like you. Maybe other people have different concerns or worries that impact them. You got people watching you, and I'm going to guess, this is my assumption, you're not thinking about the audience watching you too much. It's not bothering you or distracting you.
No, it's not. If only it makes me, more excited, more happy that the people like watch, they can watch me do what I love doing. I can inspire people all over the world. And I mean, I can see how it can be a burden or it can become too much. But we're, in that sense, as women hockey players, we did not really play in front of a big crowd. The last decade, I don't know, it has always felt like a hobby. It has always been like something I get to do and like my free time, and just it has never been like my job, or I never made money from playing hockey, and I never had to like read bad comments online about the performance. I mean, it's cruel. I mean, my older brother, he's a professional hockey player. He played in the NHL a few years, and I mean, if you are playing at that level and you have so many people watching, I mean, it's okay that they're hard on the players, but it's also just ridiculous because they can't even skate and they try to say like what they do wrong on the ice, and they don't care about like the person behind the gear. I mean, they only and that's their right. It's hockey. Hockey creates a lot of money. It's a business, and people pay a lot of money to watch you play and want to see you perform well. But luckily I got to see that from him, that it's sometimes a big pressure if that's your job. And I always got to do it as a hobby. I never made money from playing hockey, and I always enjoyed it, and people would only write about us if we did well. If we did something special, if we won a medal, people would get excited and write about us. But if we didn't do well, nobody cared. So I think in that sense, we're very lucky. But now, obviously, I'm super happy that there is a future in women's hockey. And now we are a market, and now we get haters and we get people that expect more from us, and we make money from playing hockey. So you kind of almost feel like you need to be even better. You need to fulfill the contract you signed. You need to be good at it. You can't allow yourself to not play well. And beforehand, it was like, oh, had a bad day. Yeah, it happens. Like, nobody really cares, except you didn't want to let your teammates down, but nobody in the stands or newspapers or anywhere really really cared. So that's a new experience. But all we wanted always like was having that experience and playing in front of a sold out stadium. And last year was the first time we were able to do that regularly. And it has been so much fun. I can't even describe how much different it feels to play in front of a sold out crowd compared to a few hundred people or friends watching. I mean, thank you that they all always came and supported us, but it's definitely different if you feel that community behind you cheering your team on, just like supporting you in what you do, and watching you do what you love. So I never had that pressure so far. And I thrive when people want to come watch me play. But I can definitely see the other side.
We can probably talk forever about you and your experience. And there's so much. Maybe we'll have you come back another time when y'all win the championship. But you're such a humble person that it's hard to put into words exactly what a great role model you are for people to hear this. Because, you know, like for kids watching professional athletes, it's just like, oh, like they're great at their sport. They're superhuman, whatever. Like this whole conversation, like marginally has been about hockey.
Yep.
And I love that. And I hope that this is a good window for people in athletics. And, you know, I'm a part-time professor at BU, and I help train the counselors in training in grad school. And some of them are going into sports psychology, and they're very passionate about just the well-being of athletes. It's such a movement. It really is, more than ever. And a lot of them are ex-athletes. They're former athletes, and they really want to make a difference. And everything that we talked about, you know, everyone's different. Everyone's journey is different. Everybody's mental journey is different. And all their experiences may not match up exactly like you, but everybody has a journey, a healthy journey, a positive journey, whatever, you know, whatever that looks like for them. It takes time to figure out what that is. But your story is so profound, and it's hard for me to fully express my gratitude for that, because it's hard to put into words. But thank you so much, Alina.
Thank you. No, it has been, really great talking to you guys. And thank you for the work you guys do for all the athletes. And this podcast is really great. And since Mia Brown told me about you guys, I've been listening to a few episodes, and just, the people you talk to, the stories they have, so unbelievable. And I just makes you feel so much better when you listen to those people telling their stories.
Great. Thank you so much, Alina.
Thank you for being here with us. And you're now a part of our world too. So we're grateful for you and for really being a trailblazer in your craft. I'm not even going to say in your sport, because it really is a craft. It's about, like you said, all the different component parts of all that you do for yourself and for others. It's a really beautiful thing. We wish you all the best for the season ahead and for all of your endeavors.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Read Connected podcast. Please remember that this is a podcast intended to educate and share ideas, but it is not a substitute for professional care that may be beneficial to you at different points of your life. If you are in need of support, please contact your primary care physician, local hospital, educational institution, or support staff at your place of employment to seek out referrals for what may be most helpful for you. Ideas shared here have been shaped by many years of training, incredible mentors, research, theory, evidence-based practices, and our work with individuals over the years, but it's not intended to represent opinions of those we work with or who we are affiliated with. The Reconnected podcast is hosted by siblings Alexis Reed and Dr. Gerald Reed. Original music is written and recorded by Gerald Reed. Editing and recording was done by Cybersound Studios. If you want to follow along on this journey with us, the Reconnected podcast will be releasing new episodes every 2 weeks each season. So please subscribe for updates and notifications. Feel free to also follow us on Instagram at Reconnected Podcast. That's Reconnected Podcast, and Twitter at Reconnected. We are grateful for you joining us and look forward to future episodes. In the meanwhile, be curious, be open, and be well.